Hi, my loves. This is your host, Carla, bringing stories of life experiences and of powerful lessons. Also sharing healing methods and topics of the natural and supernatural. Remember, you are the medicine. Tú eres la medicina, Carla After Dark. So now that you got a name from a four-year-old, who's Madhu?
This is an identity that's developed over time. It's been a discovery process. There's something about renaming yourself that can be a really healing and empowering experience. And I think it makes sense for us to change our names throughout our life, because the identity we have as a child is one identity, and then hopefully we grow and blossom into a different person, and it kind of makes sense we would have a different name to call in a different energy that's separate from the childhood identity. So I think it's a natural thing for a person to have different names through the life cycle. You know, and even as simple as like my grandmother, like I knew her as Mamita. Mamita. But it's like, was she called that earlier in her life?
Yeah.
And her mother was Mamina.
Mamina.
But you know, becoming a grandmother was the initiation of that identity. So that's one example. But as we go through life processes and initiation processes, I think different names might come to reflect the blossoming identity and to give a clear distinction of, you know, one chapter moving into another chapter. So entering into the chapter of Madhu. So, all right, it's a opportunity to call in these different energies, and all of the events that have transpired in my life since that time, I can say I've attracted very powerful teachers. I've attracted the type of spiritual eldership that I was describing earlier that I wish I would have had earlier in my development. They started coming naturally. One teacher I met happened during this training in sound, voice, and music healing, where a number of different teachers and experts came throughout the 9-month course, one of whom is a man named Master Ming Tong Gu. He's a Qigong master, and he came to our class and guided us through a sound healing practice to heal and balance the energies of our organs, 5 organ systems, and made us aware that we have 5 basic organ systems in our body, and each of the organs is responsible for a different emotion. And this comes from traditional Chinese medicine. It's understood that our organs have like a personality, and they will have emotional experiences that reflect being out of balance or in balance. And so how can we make the distinction, and how can we correct the imbalances and draw them closer to a balanced expression? So using sound is a powerful way to identify what each organ is wanting to express and give it its expression. And then call it into balance and harmony. So like most powerful one that I connected to was the liver. The liver is part of our purification system. And our liver is responsible for the emotion of anger. So if we're experiencing a lot of anger, it's probably because our liver is out of balance in some way. So what happens when we balance that energy? It expresses itself as courage. So it's the same energy, anger and courage. It's just being expressed in a different way. One expression is more constructive. One expression is more destructive. So what do we want to choose? We can choose, especially when we're given the tools. If we have the right tools, we can choose our experience in a very skillful way by using our mind, using vibration, and connecting to the very source of those feelings. And it affects the organs physically. And it affects the emotional experience of us. It affects the mind. It affects our spirit. So I was so impressed with his teaching that I wanted to work with him more. And so I started attending his classes. He had weekly classes in person. And it became much more than just the sound. It was a very body-oriented, movement-oriented practice, where I started to become more embodied and continue the process of learning how to use the body again after having it totally disconnected.
Yeah.
And slow movements, very mindful movements of connecting to the chi, the life force energy, and directing it to the body for healing. He teaches a type of qigong that's called medical qigong. It's called medical qigong because it's all about healing oneself and then healing others. So I was very interested in this type of qigong. And I became pretty close to Ming Tong. We became friends. His family and I became very close. I actually got to babysit for his son and teach him a little piano when he was a little kid. And it was a really special time, and I owe him a lot for showing me this way of mastering the mind and going beyond the story and just tapping into the energy and then skillfully moving and transforming the energy so that our life is no longer run by our emotions or our thoughts. It's a way of directing thoughts and directing energy to flow in the most constructive way. And I think for anyone who's interested in healing, this is kind of a foundation. Qigong. Qigong is a practice of practicing the movement of qi. That's what it means. Gong is like cultivating. So cultivating the qi. And for whatever reason, in Western culture, yoga became popularized and so much energy went to yoga. But I remember Ming Tong saying, ideally, qigong would have gotten more popularity first before the yoga, because yoga has a lot of benefits and, you know, developing flexibility and opening the channels that way. But qigong is really emphasizing the use of the mind and having a really strong mind to direct the energy. So it's more of a foundation. So I feel really lucky that I found Ming Tong in 2010. And I studied really deeply with him for about 2.5 years. And it was during this time when I became Madhu. And he was one of the first people. He called me Matthew at first. and then I think he was able to transition and calling me Madhu. So he was my first really strong, influential teacher. Naturally, as I progressed down that path, I was directed into the next layer of healing. So after I got the physical and mental peace, what came next was the earth, the living essence of the earth spirit. So I was always, I think we're always told, you know, Mother Nature, you know, the earth is alive. But how deeply do we get the experience of it? And I wasn't raised in a way where I was spending time in nature or going camping. My family didn't really do that, so I didn't really connect deeply with earth. But around 2012, I remember having a whisper come into my mind. I was meditating, and I heard very clearly a voice say, "Shasta." And it just kind of popped out of my meditation. Shasta, I think I've heard of that. That's in California. What's that about? And anybody that's been to Mount Shasta understands Shasta is a heavily activated portal, a very strong mountain energy, very strong spiritual charge is found in Mount Shasta. I didn't know this at the time. I just heard the word and very soon after went up there, found my way. It was a 4-hour drive. And going to Mount Shasta opened up many doors for me. I think the main thing that happened was when I met people there, they told me, you know, it's really easy to camp here. You can just put up a tent and anywhere really, you just camp. So I did that and
pull over.
I pulled over, found a spot by a river.
Nice.
And I got a tent, and it was in the summertime, so it was so comfortable at night. It's perfect weather. Wake up, bathe in the river, move at the speed of earth, and be so connected, and to see the mountain in the distance, and to go on the mountain, and to hear the whispers of nature, and to be consistently guided into coincidences, and meeting people, and meeting a lot of young men on a devotional spiritual path. It was a really important thing for me to be around young men, people my age, because before that I was mostly around older ladies. Older ladies are very interested in healing themselves apparently, and I was always, you know, like, I feel like I had a lot of spirit moms. There are all these women who just embraced me
and nurtured you,
and they're like, because I'm like the only 20-year-old man in these classes in Qigong. And so it was refreshing and healing to connect with brothers for the first time in Mount Shasta and connect with the earth. And then I finally realized the earth is listening. The earth is so alive. Now I get it. I would love to learn about an earth-based tradition. And soon after I had this desire, I got to meet another teacher. This man's name is Don Oscar Miro Quesada. He is a Peruvian high ritualist. In Quechua, this is called Alto Misayoc, a high ritualist, a person who has received initiations to wield the elemental forces for healing. And he comes from the Andean traditions, ancient Peruvian lineage. I met him in 2013 and was blown away by his ability to see people's energies and to direct the flow of ceremony. And so here I encounter these words in Quechua Pachamama. You know, we hear Pachamama, but beyond that, like connecting to Mama Kia, the moon, Wiracocha, creator, Inti, the sun, Quichi, the rainbow. Like these words that I've just named are like a foundation in the Andean cosmology to work with the elemental forces, like these grounding forces. And these forces are harnessed in what is called a mesa, which I have here in front of us. This is a representation of what's called a Pachacuti mesa, a particular healing altar ground that expresses the elements that are holding us all together. It's like a mirror for ourself and all of life. Everybody can agree upon that. Earth, water, air, fire. And the center is all about the soul. So having a Pachacuti mesa at the very most simple, basic layer of it, it's a mirror of ourself. And it helps us remember who we are. And it allows us to be effective in healing ourselves, healing our community, and healing the planet. And I studied with Don Oscar the ways of the Pachacuti Mesa. And immediately was so inspired by the teachings of the Pachacuti Mesa that music started to come through me based on what I was learning. And I would write songs that was based on what I was learning. And I had this prayer, gosh, I just would love Don Oscar to hear my music one day. Just I think he would like it. And I went on this journey with one of my dearest brothers. His name's Alex Kugler. We studied this path together and we sang together. And we got that opportunity to sing for Don Oscar. And he basically pulled us in and invited us to sing in ceremony. And what it opened up was this incredible privilege to hold space of the music in these elaborate 5-day rituals where we're doing ceremony around altar grounds, rituals around altar grounds. This isn't like working with plants. This is really just about the art of being a ritualist and a ceremonialist and moving energies of creation for healing. And this training is really about becoming a master of ceremony, how one prepares for ceremony, how one times their ceremony to be in alignment with cosmic rhythms. And that's how good medicine can be translated to the people and to the planet. So we became the music for these gatherings a couple times a year. And we had a important position because we would raise the energy of the ceremony when it was time for music. In ceremony, the spirits are fed by celebration and music. And when the music is really good and energizing and we get the spirit high, that's when it becomes good food for the unseen realms. And this really got me in this role of being a ceremonial musician and timing the music precisely and knowing what songs to sing at any given moment to produce the energy that's desired.
Wow, that's beautiful. Because that's exactly what I was going to ask you, but you obviously elaborated already how a ceremonialist musician, you are guiding it through your music. At this, going on that, so at this point, when was your first experience using any kind of plant medicine or something that it was obviously connecting? Obviously, you're connecting with nature, but at this point now, you're being guided by Oscar, correct? And have you already experienced plant medicine, or you? What was the first medicine that you tried?
Well, I think I want to distinguish plant medicine versus master plants.
There you go.
Because cannabis, I'd say plant medicine. Master plant, I think, is a different domain. at that time, cannabis was a part of my life. So yeah, plant medicine, I feel like it was a tool to open my channels, give me creativity. And it was helpful for a time, but the exquisite wisdom that can come through master plants and ceremonial communion with master plants is a whole nother domain that wasn't open to me until 2013, was when I first stepped in to attending a ceremony. This was with Huachuma, the San Pedro cactus, and going to a ceremony through the Native American church. And that experience felt so familiar to me. I feel like drinking San Pedro, just, I was like, well, this is a good feeling. And I feel so at home in this vibration. It was actually very subtle, even though I drank a number of cups. But right away, I was actually helping people around me who were having a hard time.
Yeah.
And I was put to work there. And then a few months later, I was learning about ayahuasca by watching videos online and hearing all these stories that I felt connected to, like stories of people having journeys and dying in the journey and realizing they didn't die and they learned all these things and then came back. Because I feel I experienced that same thing through my process of healing. Didn't require any medicine, but it was an identical experience. So I wanted to meet people who were communing with ayahuasca because I felt like these are my family. I want to relate with them.
Yeah.
And I found myself attending a ceremony and again feeling so familiar. And yeah, I went to some dark places in the journey, but overall, it felt very familiar to my being. And even in that ceremony, the leader put me to task and kind of noticed me and said, go do healing on this person. Like, you know what to do. So I'm like, oh, okay. I do know what to do. I'm directing healing without even touching this, just like... Yeah. Using the Reiki training.
Yeah.
And I feel this pathway just opened itself to me because of my experience, my background, my upbringing, and whatever past lives I've had. I feel I was just picking up where I left off, and it wasn't a mystery to me. And for the most part, I felt very compatible with the master plants. And so that began a journey of communing with them every so often, learning from them, integrating those processes, and over time just continuing to like deepen that relationship and witnessing how healing these master plants are. Like that, for most people, these plants know the body so well that it can extract the nonsense in a very efficient way.
Yeah.
And what I value of all the trainings I've received is, what do we do after these cathartic ceremonies, where we are doing a lot of processing in a short amount of time? So then what do? How do we hold it and ground it into our day-to-day life and have ceremonial living and honor the unseen realms? How do we live in reciprocity to the vast unseen realm? We might not be able to see it, but there is a way we can connect to it. And it doesn't just involve master plant communions. It involves reciprocity, making offerings to the unseen beings that are always supporting us. Mm. We just have to remember who they are and how to offer them food so that this flow of what is called Aini in Quechua, the flow of sacred reciprocity, can be maintained. Mm. And that's the responsibility of someone who's going down this path of Alto Misayoc, master of ceremony. Mm. It's really about the art of reciprocity, because that's what holds everything together in balance. Yeah. That's what makes our life in balance. It's not the ceremonies. Like, those have a role, but it's the maintenance of how we're living with our local environment and acknowledging the spirit that is alive, so alive and animated, mm. and just waiting for us to acknowledge it.
That's so beautiful. That's so beautifully said. I'm like, yes, talking to you or just listening to you. I'm not even talking. I'm just like, wow. It's, you know, you say it with words, what I've experienced. You know, sometimes we don't have words, and you're sharing exactly what I feel like. It resonates so heavy. And the master plans, you're right, it has their own like technology and recognizes our arts. And so it's just everything that comes with it. And the ceremony of life, it's like there's the balance where I agree, the integration part of this is our human experience that we chose to live, right? And with that, so your first experience with Huchuma and then ayahuasca came. Did you feel it was like a call, or was it like someone just talked about it and you're just like, I want to try it, you know? Hey, why not? You know, I'm already here. How did that came about?
There was a call. There was, like I said, part of it is the watching of YouTube videos.
That's the power.
The number one form of research, yes, that you do.
We thank you, YouTube.
Right?
It plays its part.
and it's like, yeah, we're drawn to things, we're attracted to, yeah, them, so like we want to learn. And also, I took it very seriously. I spent a lot of time waiting to really feel the authentic call and the pull and, mm-hmm, the timing of the right situation that felt safe for me. And the dreaming became a part of it. I can't remember the exact dreams that I had, but there were some dreams where, mm-hmm, I could feel the spirit of ayahuasca, the spirit of Huachuma. And to me, that's a confirmation. Mm. At least part of the confirmation, you know? So it was convincing me, okay, it's time. It's time. And, you know, there's always some trepidation, a little bit of fear going into the unknown. Like, well, what am I going to see? Am I going to throw up?
All those crazy thoughts.
I don't know if I want to.
Am I
going to
roll over in the mud or the ground? Or am I going to? Yeah, all these crazy thoughts come through. Yeah, it's when you, the unknown part, right? When you sat down with Abuelita, how was that for you?
First time?
Mm-hmm. When you said yes to the call?
Well, it was a powerful ceremony. I remember at first feeling very familiar. Mm-hmm. And I loved the feeling. I loved how wild it felt. It's like, wow, I'm entering into a different dimension. What is this? Sounds became altered. Visions, like patterns. And feeling connected. Okay, I'll tell you one of the visions that I saw that was very meaningful. One of the things we were guided to practice was reciting the Ho'oponopono phrases, which are, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you. We were told these are good phrases to have when you're in the journey space. They'll be very helpful to you. So just remember those if you're having a hard time. So I had that kind of in my back pocket. And somebody next to me was going through a dark experience. He needed a lot of help. He kept saying, death, 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 death. And I'm sitting next to this guy like, are you kidding me? You're coming up here yelling death. Like, can you killing my vibe. But then I'm like, I'm sitting there. And I'm like watching all these people crowd around him, like trying to help him, like get him down, like, you know, call in the light. And I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden I open my eyes and I see a grid of light. These lines of fine white lines connecting everyone in the space. And I just started doing the mantra. I just started just saying, I love you. Just that part. And I really felt it. I was like, I love you. And when I really locked into that, I saw the grid go like, change up. And the dude snapped out of it. And he like shook it off. He's like, whoa. And he stood up and he was like, whoa.
That was wild.
And he like snapped out of it. And I was... And I was in a place with the medicine where I couldn't walk or anything. It kind of can give you, you know, you ain't going to move.
You ain't going to be saying.
Sitting down for the next couple hours. So even without having the ability to move, just the mind, the experience that I had showed me just projecting that thought will change the entire landscape. It can have an effect on everything and everyone around you. And I feel like that was a teaching for me to just get an understanding. Like if there's heavy density around you, we can merge with that and get freaked out by it or react to it. Or we can just like enter in our own space and call on these higher frequencies, a more coherent frequency, because the love is a more coherent and organized frequency. And I saw that. Wow. The medicine gave me that gift of seeing it in action. I've never had that vision again, but because I had it, it informs how I use my mind, my consciousness in a healing way, and it becomes a tool. So that was right away, first experience working with grandmother. It showed me that valuable teaching.
Wow. That was like, what I call, you're completely alchemized. Like, you're just completely with your own energy, and that you pulling that out, like love, you know, that's such a powerful word. And I think when you connected with that, you're already in that vibration, you shifted, you know, energy shifter right there. That's beautiful. And from that experience, that's one that you feel like is very vivid. What other one that you knew that you were going to be a ceremonial, like the musician that you are now, that took you there, like slowly or?
Well, one of the main facets of working with master plants is the way that they want your voice to come out and express through song. And that's one of the most healing aspects of working with these plant teachers, is they will encourage a person to sing and to work with that. And so whatever level of working with the voice we're at, the medicine kind of meets you and says, offer that sound. So being a singer, it feels so good to sing beautiful songs, to sing medicine songs, to sing in ancient languages. And the medicine boosts your ability to sing.
Yeah.
It kind of, you know, elevates you.
Elevates.
Like more. It's like, it allows for more tonality to come out. And then your voice starts doing different things. Like, I didn't know I could do that. Like, in the middle of singing, you're just like, whoa, who is doing this? Yeah. What is this?
Yeah.
I think that's one of the most beautiful things about working with these plant teachers. And so that motivates me to learn songs or write songs that can be used for healing and setting the tone for others to receive healing. Because whatever music is in the field, when you're working with the plant medicines and altered states, the music is an essential ingredient. It really sets the tone for the healing that can take place. And I feel like that's my role, is like weaving a tapestry of sound that can guide the energy to be elevated or bring the energy down into a peaceful, quiet place. So whatever needs to be felt at any given moment is available to people who are journeying.
Yes. Here comes the question where it comes in mind, is that when you start getting inspired, do you normally do it like not altered, or you're in a sober space when you're writing your music, or do they manifest while you're in medicine?
Inspiration. Where does inspiration come from? I feel inspired in my music collaboration with my dear soul brother, Egemin Sanli. There's something about soul family.
Yes.
I think one of the greatest prayers a human can make is, may I be reunited with my soul family. I remember when I went to Mount Shasta in 2013 and I learned about this concept of soul family and the prayer and going into the dream state, and like at night before you go to sleep, asking your dreams to connect you to your soul family, and allowing that to happen in your dreams so that it starts to plant seeds for it to happen in reality. And what I've witnessed is steadily I have met people in my soul family, and now I feel like I have a huge family. I'm reuniting with everybody.
I know, you're reunited with me.
Right. I've got a huge family. And
do.
What does it mean to have soul family? It's the beings who you've had many lifetimes with. You know each other so well. It's immediate familiarity, and you get right to work. And what is your purpose, and how can I help you shine, and how can you help me shine? And when I met Ege, immediately we entered into this divine current of sound and spontaneous creation. And we just, like, it was as if we've known each other our whole life. And we jumped right into that, and we can just make magic happen instantaneously by the way that we create music together. It's our language, it's our connection. And so we've created a lot of music, a lot of archives of music, and so much of it is just spontaneous on the spot.
Beautiful.
Comes through.
Yeah.
So when we talk about inspiration, immediately I think about Ege and how we go there together. And it is the most joyful thing. Like when we do our music and then we look at each other afterwards, it's just like, yeah.
This is dope.
Yeah, we get to do this, brother. It's magic.
Yep. That's so, so awesome. To have a brother that's an inspiration, I'm sure he feels the same with you, because you guys have this collab. And you guys, how much work have you guys done together? Or do you started with him, or?
We met each other. Oh gosh. I think it might've been in 2018. And at this point we have 4 albums we recorded in a studio and 10 live albums. I don't know. I lost track because we have a lot of live material.
Yeah.
So we have archives. I remember one time we did a spreadsheet of all the songs that we've created together, and it's like 150 or something songs, different chants, wow. Different songs. Some of them we've only done once, because everything we do, so much of what we do is just channeled in the moment, and it's like in its perfection. That's the wild thing.
Wow.
Is that we're in that inspiration channel. And we'll write a song like in its completion in the moment. And luckily, we may have hit the record button. Usually we do. So we're capturing it. And we listen back. We're like, wow. We just brought down the whole universe into that moment.
That's so powerful.
And then we have to try to do it again. And that's the trick. It's like, how do we recreate that?
Right?
And we can. We do it. But every time it's a little different.
Yeah, kind of just a little tricked out. Can I ask you, you said 150, okay, together, right? How about by yourself?
I don't really count these things, but like I got
handful.
I got songs. So I have another amazing album I did with my friend Alex Kugler. Mm-hmm. It's called Chaska Punku. I'm very proud of this album. In 2017, it's from the Pachacuti Mesa tradition, music that inspired us through that tradition. And this album has a number of songs in Quechua, has a couple songs in Spanish, has one song where I'm chanting in Tibetan and Alex is chanting in Hebrew. Oh. Very interesting. I don't know any other song out there that has that. No. We ended up calling.
Is that on YouTube?
Probably. Yeah. The name of that song, we called it Jubu.
Jubu.
That's a phrase. People who are Jewish and Buddhist, they're called Jubus. There's a lot of Jews that turn to Buddhism, and that's a Jubu.
That's a Jubu.
And like, I guess I'm a Jubu because like, I grew up Jewish. And then I went really into the Tibetan Buddhist path and learned many different chants in Tibetan. So in this track, Jubu, I'm chanting the 100 syllable Vajrasattva mantra while Alex is chanting in Hebrew. And I was like, we need to call this song Jubu. Like, what else could this be called? So it's kind of funny. And so this album is one that I'm really proud of. My solo music, I have some live material. I don't yet have a solo album. I know I need to do that in my lifetime.
You read my mind.
I have a lot of songs out there. I think my most popular song is called Rainbow Warriors.
I was just going to ask you about that one. So, I swear, I was letting you quiet, like, go ahead, finish, and then I'm all, so yeah, Rainbow Warriors.
Yeah, this is a song, it's got a lot of popularity over the years, because it's kind of like an anthem.
Yeah.
For...
It does feel very empowering.
The awakening, the awakening being, the being who is remembering the luminous nature of who we are, like beyond the eyes that can see, we are the full rainbow spectrum of light, like a prism. Like our eyes might not be able to see it, but we have this energy body, which in Quechua, it's called Pokpo. Pokpo is the energy bubble that surrounds all living beings, and it's a luminous egg, it's a bubble. And some people can see that. Some people can perceive the Pokpo. And when we make that shift and we see unification. Like everyone is a beautiful, luminous being. That's the beginning of this process of being a rainbow warrior. Someone who is devoted to remembering, you know, we are spiritual beings having a human experience. And so the human experience has filled with all these illusions, which makes everything confusing and makes our mind create all these definitions of separation. You know, you're this, I'm that. Mm-hmm. And you know, I want to go back to like my childhood because I appreciate being confused about my cultural identity. So when I grew up, I went to a pretty diverse high school, which I feel really fortunate that I went to a high school where I got to have friends of every ethnicity. But when you're in a school setting like that, there's a common question that gets asked by the school children. They ask you this question: what are you? What are you?
I'm a human.
Are you Mexican? Are you white? Yeah. Are you?
Yeah.
Wait, what are you?
Where are you?
And you have to like to fit in. You got to figure out what you are, and then
mix.
And then you also can discover like what you're ashamed of, because like people ask me, "What are you?" And I'd be like, "Well, I'm Puerto Rican." I didn't want to say anything about being Jewish though.
Why?
Being Jewish can.
It does have a
baggage. Carry a lot of baggage.
Yeah.
We have a survivor story. Mm-hmm. I have a survivor story. I am the product of a Jewish woman who survived in the early 1900s, the pogroms, the slaughtering of Jewish people in Ukraine. My great-grandmother and my great-grandfather had to flee Ukraine. My great-grandmother was 16 years old and had the courage to leave the whole family.
Wow.
We believe that her three siblings and her parents were all murdered. There's nothing left behind for them, but she survived. My great-grandfather survived. We're able to get on a ship that brought them to Argentina for 1 year and then go to the United States. This is fascinating. This is what I'm telling you. Because while in Argentina, they became pregnant. And so when it was time for the boat to leave, my great-grandmother was 9 months pregnant. And she needed to lie and say she was only 6 months pregnant in order to get on this ship. So they accepted her. So on this 11-day journey,
oh, Lord.
After 3 days, she starts going into labor on the ship, and they have to move her to first class, and the doctors deliver the baby, my grandmother, on the high seas. Just outside of the Bermuda Triangle was my grandmother born. And they had no money. There were gamblers on the ship, and they said, if it's a boy, we'll give them $75. If it's a girl, we'll give them $30. So they got $30.
Oh,
I think that was all the money they had when they arrived in New York. So this is my roots, my origin story. And then you see this beauty and like, what an adventure story. But the trauma, the fear.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this is a common experience for Jewish people, and there's just so much shame. So when I was growing up, I didn't want to talk about that. I wasn't proud of it like I am now. I can tell you this story and be like, yeah, that's where I came from. But as a young person, I wanted to eliminate that. And maybe that's like a residue that comes when you are persecuted. And there's this energy of, we want to eliminate you.
Mm-hmm.
Then we start to do that to ourselves. Yep. I wanted to eliminate that part of myself because it's fearful. If I claim who I am, then I'm dead.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is ingrained into the DNA until it's rewritten. My journey of life has been to rewrite that. And So I think we were talking about something slightly different before I got into that story. But I felt it was important to tell.
Yes, it is important because that's showing where the diversity, right? You were ashamed to express that you were Jewish or brought up Jew. And I think you're right in that part when you have to, that kind of brings back when, not that I was ashamed to be Mexican. It was more like, we're not wanted here. Right? Mm. So rejection is huge, ingrained. But then again, it goes, I've seen in my visions and journeys, healing my lineage, healing my ancestors, healing the woman in my lineage. So much trauma and so much abandonment and rejection is being in the DNA. So I have to continuously shift that, like, and I have, like, it's like a must. I have to do this for not just me, for my future, you know, future self, my descendants. And so in that form, like, you are changing that for sure, rewriting everything. So beautiful.
Mm.
Yeah. So, and that diversity of that. So what were we going on that?
I don't even remember. I feel like somehow I got into that, like, the question of, what are you? But there was something before that.
Oh, well, it was definitely... Oh, we can edit this part.
We probably could just go into a different realm. Like, we were talking about...
Your inspiration. No.
Inspiration. And then the Rainbow Warrior. What are you?
Yes.
So back, it comes back to the Rainbow Warrior.
Yeah.
Because this question that comes up, what are you, and how it becomes divisive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's beauty in this human experience, yeah, and making distinctions of what am I versus what are you. And how can we hold that there is something that unifies us? What would happen if we invested a little bit more in the unifying threads? Mm. So this awareness of the luminous body, the luminous nature, and finding ways to connect to that and relate to it. And this is what the training in the Pachacuti Mesa has offered me, is how do we maintain our pokpo? How do we honor the energy body that is more of who and what we are than any other story we can tell? There is ways to maintain and cleanse and fortify the energetic parts of ourselves through doing limpias, doing cleanses. And we can feel different. We can feel the inner harmony that arises when we tend to these subtle energetic layers. And then we can relate to others from that place too, and honor another person's subtle energy body. And then, you know, the differences that we see become less of a they don't really enter into the way we relate to each other. It's something we can see and appreciate the beauty, but it's really like, let's unify here. So this is the anthem of the Rainbow Warriors, a song that is meant to really ignite the passion around that. Because a lot of people, when they awaken, they're like, yeah, I am that. So like, if I was in high school, if I track back and somebody said that question to me, so what are you? I'm like, I'm a rainbow warrior. You know, if I had known, they'd be like, what? What are you talking about?
What rainbow? Oh, well, maybe. I don't know. They could have gone into a different, like, rainbow?
I know. A rainbow could be, there's different kinds of rainbows. But it's like, break down, what is a rainbow?
Oh, yeah.
In Quechua, the term is cuichi.
Cuichi.
Cuichi. That is the term for rainbow. What is a rainbow? It's the seven colors of light that our soul experiences in this dimension. We can go to a different dimension and experience different colors. Mm. Maybe there's a five color dimension. Maybe there's a blue realm. Maybe there's a yellow realm. Mm. The gift of this dimension is we have access to this bandwidth of experience that we learn and grow from. So we honor that as sacred. Mm. And we honor that we hold these frequencies in our being, in our pokpo. So this is the essence of rainbow. It's, to me, it's kuichi. Wilka Kuichi, sacred rainbow.
Sacred rainbow. That's beautiful. So Rainbow Warrior and Kache.
What'd you say?
Is it Kache? Kache?
The song? Quechua.
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 Well, the song, in the song Rainbow Warriors, to capture the essence of what this Rainbow Warrior energy is, I chant in like three or four different languages at the end of the song. And when I perform it live, I will add on whatever, you know, is in the moment. I'll do different chants because what I'm attempting to convey is these ancient languages carry the torch and they all carry the same torch. Mm. So I end the song Rainbow Warrior with a Tibetan prayer to awaken the bodhicitta, which is the awakened mind. Mm. And we ask in that prayer that the bodhicitta may arise where it has not yet arisen. Mm. I like to seal the song with that prayer, like awaken the heart, awaken the mind. And I also sing the Shema, which is a Hebrew prayer, a prayer that is to unify. In the prayer, it's like all of Israel. Mm-hmm. Really, it's about the enlightened consciousness to be heard. May all the enlightened ears hear this message that God is one. Mm-hmm. It's a oneness that we are in the midst of. That's the Shema. And I don't even know. I start going into other chants. I'll even sing Allahu, 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 Allahu. And to exalt the divine name in Arabic, Allah, and also honoring my my brother Ege, because where he grew up in Turkey, it's like so embedded in the culture and so beautiful. And so when I'm chanting the divine names and bringing together all these sounds, it's a celebration. At the end of the song. And I feel like that's why so many people are connecting to it, because when we can dance in that celebration of the multiplicity and the diversity and realize it's a oneness, we're doing something that's honoring the future generations and the ancestors to say, okay, at least for this moment, we can put down the differences and agree to do one thing, which is love, celebrate, appreciate.
Yes, that's beautiful. What's and one of your favorites besides Rainbow Warriors, or is there other songs that you feel very connected with? I know, this is a hard one, Carla.
I think the simple answer is no. You ask me to choose... And I just can't. I can't do that. You know, I can't do
okay,
that.
Okay, which one do you... which one is... Or more than one, of course. And like in ceremony, like when you were being a ceremonialist.
Well, I think there are certain collections of songs. Like I mentioned the album Chaskapunku. I'm really proud of that album. I'm really proud of Body of Ecstasy, which is an album that Ege and I created inspired by a book called The Radiant Sutras. Mm. I'm very proud of that album because of where it comes from. The Radiant Sutras is a book that was translated from an original Sanskrit text, or rather interpreted from an original Sanskrit text. So Loren Roche writes The Radiant Sutras, and it's beautiful poetry. 112 verses. Where that comes from is a Sanskrit text called the Vijnana Bhairava Tantra. The Vijnana Bhairava Tantra is a text that is a conversation between Shiva and his consort Parvati, or Shakti. And in this conversation, Parvati asks, basically it's like, Shiva, how do you attain this supreme state of bliss and stillness and emptiness? Mm. How do you attain this divine, unmovable state? And he responds by saying, I can tell you 112 ways to attain this state. And here I go. And there you get 112 verses in Sanskrit. Each of them individually is a teaching that will allow the mind to transcend and get to that effervescent, joyful place and remain there. Mm. So Lo and Rosh was able to take from the Sanskrit and turn them into poems that are pretty much pre-made songs. And Ege and I spent an afternoon recording, and I just opened up the book and looked at one like, this looks like one I can sing.
Just pick and choose.
Lay down the beat, like immediately lay down a beat. He starts playing, and then I start singing the melodies right away. And we basically, you know, channeled the music. Mm-hmm. And eventually we got in contact with Lauren and asked permission, can we use your words for music? And he says, yes, of course. This is what it was made for. Mm. The whole point is that this consciousness is shared, that people have the awakening. That's what's going to really create the transformation. So in Body of Ecstasy, there's 10 songs in there that offer 10 different ways to commune with this state of consciousness, that it's difficult to convey it in words, but there are words that convey it. And so the songs allow us to get there. And I'm very proud to have songs that guide people through an experience of connecting to that consciousness. And because they're catchy and you start remembering the words, they serve as reminders. And what I witness for myself is their teachings, teaching me, like if I'm ever going through a rough patch, well, there's a song for that. Mm. And that's what starts running through my mind. And then I learn and grow from it. And I witness people who are close to me that know the music also remembering through the pathway of the songs.
It's like you're completely coding a lot, like during the music. That's how I feel when I listen to you. It's like, oh, I forgot for a minute who I am. You remind me. It's like that code effect, you know, and it just shifts me and centers me, and immediately I feel like that remembrance, you know. What can I ask more about you? You give so much, Madhu. It's so rich. It's like a rich chocolate.
Chocolate's good.
Chocolate's good.
It's a superfood, right?
Sure. Yes. Going back into the master plans, for somebody who's listening to you on this episode, how you encourage them to begin, I mean, in their path, discovering, or, I mean, you traveled a lot.
Yes, yeah, I've been to Peru. I could talk about my travels, but what you were asking me, it's a question that I can answer now in a way that reflects who I am now. If you would have asked me this question a year ago, you would have gotten a different response. Mm-hmm. even, you know, a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
Really, it's a question I imagine I would answer differently in a year from now, but where I'm at now, mm-hmm. any person that is seeking to have communion with plants. What usually brings a person to the plants is trauma, relational difficulties, childhood experiences, and the plants can be very helpful for that, to begin a process of reclaiming the parts that have been severed.
Hmm.
We can't expect that process to be completed by the plant allies. They're allies. They can really help. They can do a lot. Maybe even sometimes they can give you the full integration. So to approach it not as a destination, but as mm-hmm. a part of a healing process that ideally has a foundation around it. Community is so important. Having guidance. At this point, when working with plant medicines and entheogens is becoming so important for humanity to have the deep healing occur, at the same time, integration is so valuable. And what does that mean? It means having some support around the ceremony itself. Community, or even a professional, someone who has skill in bringing a person back. So in any indigenous culture, there's rites of passages. There's initiations that must occur to bring people from one stage of life into the next. The most important aspect is the way that they're welcomed back to the village. We don't really have a village in our Western society anymore. Everything is so scattered. We have to manufacture a village in some way, or create it, or at least get the essential ingredients of the village. And so how we come home, who greets us and allows us to tell our story so that we can make sense and digest the experience and then make the changes in our life to honor the transformation that took place when we communed with that wisdom plant. So the first thing I will tell people is really, don't look at the experience of the plant medicine ceremony to be like the destination. Think of it as a part that's going to stir up a healing process, and look around for the infrastructure
mm-hmm.
and find a way to have strong container. So that's how I would advise someone. And, you know, I keep pointing to this mesa. This is a path that is really helpful. And there's many paths. I think when we have teachers, elders, communities that are grounded in the ancient ways, it helps us have that infrastructure.
Mm.
And I wouldn't say it's a requirement, because certainly you can have an experience and it's still powerful, but it's helpful. And my aim is, my wish is for people to have these experiences and that they be truly healing and nourishing for the long term, not just a temporary, amazing experience. Yeah. Wow, I saw incredible shapes. Like, that's
a sacred geology. Beautiful. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And how are we going to, you know, bring that? Because there is wisdom that will come. And then implemented in our life. Mm-hmm. So like how who's going to catch you after the journey? That's even if it's just like one person, a buddy, a spouse, or a therapist.
Yeah, very true. I think that's, for me, actually one of the most important part. It's who's going to catch you. Because, again, we go back into experiencing feeling alone in your path, and you just don't even know where to start, where to go. And sometimes that can, you receive so much information, you don't know even how to process at times. And I think the most important thing for me when I didn't know how to navigate stuff in 2020, it was, I asked for my guides, I asked Higher Power, Creator, Pachamama, mm-hmm. to guide me. I know that the medicine was inside of me. And so if I could open the path for me to see what I need, and I called up, like you said, your soul family. Mm-hmm. So I created during COVID time the Moon Circle, which it was all women. So I needed sisters like to help me. Mm. And I'm sure they needed me as much as I needed them. And some of them, yeah, they sat with Aya. But that itself, it was like they didn't even know how to process it sometimes. So coming together, and we were consistently trying to do it monthly or even sooner, just gather four of us, six of us, you know, and we just come together and just shed together and express around the fire, mm-hmm. and transmute whatever doesn't longer serve us. And that was a form for me to let go. Sometimes I didn't even know, like, okay, I let go, but how do I let go? And the guidance was coming. And I was like you said, like the downloads were coming in. It's like, this is how your ancestors did it. And I heard this once from someone. It's like, the jungle called me, but the jungle came to me. And so I wasn't able to go to the jungle. I wasn't able to go to sit with a maestro or maestra. But I call upon the spirit, because we're one. And I understanding that, like, the guidance will just like get all the information. Of course, one day I would like to experience that, like just be able to sit with a maestra and be able to more remember, you know. And I figured your experiences in the jungle was amazing, and be able to have those fasts, the dietas, right? Have all those dietas. I want to talk about the dietas with you. Mm.
Well, before I go there,
yeah,
I think what you're touching on with the women's circles is so beautiful, because that's it. Like, really, that's the medicine. And even if there was no plant medicine, mm-hmm. that would be all you would need. And like, the plant medicine kind of augments mm-hmm. what you get with community and absolutely. The sisterhood and the practice of invoking the ancestors, invoking the elements. Mm-hmm. These are things also that help a person before going into working with altering the consciousness with mm-hmm. plants, to have familiarity mm-hmm. with invocation, calling in, because this is the ancestral way, the ability to call in the forces. Mm. In the Quechua tradition, it's called Kamaska. Kamaska are the living powers of nature. And so to learn how to call them. Mm. And it's not difficult. It's just a matter of practicing. And in so many indigenous traditions, there's a calling to the directions and the different mm-hmm. forces that exist around us. And that's kind of a foundation. And to me, that's beyond working with the plant medicines. It's part of the just day-to-day spiritual living, mystical living, is having the ability to call on these things. I think the plant medicines help us to see beyond the veil. And then we get it. So then we can realize, oh, it's always present. And trusting that when we speak to these unseen energies, they respond. So, yeah, now this question you ask about dieta, working with dieta is really the most skillful way and most demanding way to work with master plants and I'll just say this. When we make a sacrifice like fasting from food and taste, salt and sweets, we will uncover these layers of ourself and emotions and habits and patterns that we wouldn't be able to see because we can mask those patterns with foods, tastes. So this is dieta, as I've come to learn about it, is a Shipibo tradition from the jungles of Peru. And dieta is a period of fasting. And in the Shipibo culture, this is a period that's called Sama. And Sama is the time in which a person fasts and spends a lot of time in isolation, fasts from certain foods and tastes and salt and oils and sweets. So, but you're still consuming nourishment. You're not eating food. And there's many plants in the jungle that have healing ability and a spirit that can teach us. Plants that grow by the rivers, different trees and shrubs that all have an essence. And that is what is dieted. And so there's an elixir that is ingested of one of these master plants. So Bobinsana is a plant. Chiriksanango is a small tree. Ayahuma, a very large tree. Many, many different types of plants that exist in the jungle that are consumed and alternating with then consuming ayahuasca, which serves to be like an amplifier. So that plant that's being dieted can come to the forefront of the consciousness and start to work with you. So this is... I could speak a lot. I don't know how much, but I think I just want to point out that any person that decides to diet in the jungle, it's a strong path. It's not for everybody. One really has to be called by the plants and authentically feel like the plants of the jungle are asking to be in service with you, because that's a big journey to undertake. And you know, flying all the way down to a jungle, we have so many plants here, like all around us, wise plants, and so we should also just connect to what trees are growing around us right here, what flowers like rose and the basil, the bay tree, the oak tree, so. We have many, many plants all around us that are wisdom teachers. It's not like they're devoid of wisdom if they don't come out of the jungles and the Amazon. There's so much plant wisdom to tap into.
Yeah, so thank you for sharing that, because I'm sure there's a lot of people that they're on the path and they probably feel like, I need to go to the jungle because everybody does it. But I think you said the key word is like, if it's calling you, you know, if you feel that's the call, if, because it is, I do agree that it's not easy when you go to a dieta. I mean, so far when I talk to people that done that, you're definitely a warrior.
you're just crazy because you're like depleting yourself of minerals and okay, bringing yourself to the edge, which is the whole realm of initiation. It's like initiation is hard, like the challenges in life. We're a culture that has lost rites of passage, like the proper rituals for rites of passage. Like, how do we initiate young people at the age of 7 when it's time for them to come into this world and enter into a new phase, or at the age of 13 when a young person is supposed to go into adulthood? And some things are still in place, but I feel like for the most part, authentic rites of passages where really strong challenges are not a part of the fabric of the culture. And when we don't have rites of passage, our psyche is impacted in a way where it makes life difficult to navigate. And so subconsciously we're seeking the initiation. And so that's why healing crisis can occur. Because there's a part of our spirit that's like, no, you need to confront death in order to truly transcend. And we need these things. We need to have rites of passage that are culturally appropriate and ways that our ancestors did. And I feel like there are a lot of groups and communities that are trying to remember the ancient ways of ritual, so that we can do these things in safe ways instead of just trying to guess at like, oh, I think I need to have this cathartic experience. I'm going to just send myself there. But it might not be healthy. Like, our body might need a little more tending, and maybe there's another way. But we're all in this exploration right now of remembering, doing our best to remember how to live in a sacred way, and give ourselves the right kind of challenges and be able to come through on the other side and like be greeted by community and like, we got you, you know, you are victorious. We welcome this new being. Yes. Let's do our work together. And now, you know, it's time for you to do your sacred work.
Hey, my loves. Thank you for joining me on this episode of Carla After Dark. If you enjoy this episode, please like and subscribe, share them, follow the link below. I'm looking forward to you joining me on my next episode. Thank you for your love. Namaste.